This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The writing is on the wall. It's not written in English.
It's not even written. Clawed, more like. The claw marks are on the wall.
Good morning, Night Vale.
Hey there, friends. It's me, your fave babe, tri-host babe, Symphony.
And it's me, your babe, Meg Bashwinner.
And I'm Hal. I'm just a little baby.
And we are here as three actors of Welcome to Night Vale to, in this very special episode, people who toured around the country performing this show. So we're here to talk about it, give you some of the insider deets about what goes into making this show. And we are recording this for you on June the 9th, which is a Wednesday. Just remember that in the year of our Flying Spaghetti Monster 2021. So if we don't mention something crazy that happened yesterday, that's why. We didn't know. Forgive us. We're just as shocked as you are.
We're from the past.
We were blissfully in the past.
Yes. And this is The Investigators.
The Investigators, which is described as this in the episode description. In order to catch a murderer loose in Night Vale, the sheriff's secret police have set up a murder mystery dinner theater.
Thank you very much for saying it properly, because you got to really go for it. I definitely tried during this show a couple of times to try and do the same thing when I said it in the Tamika part. And it usually did not land. It did not.
I cannot think of it any other way because I heard Cecil say it
so many times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did this show, I think there were 60 something performances of this show. And most of them were in the span of 2 months, in March and April and May of 2015, when we did our first huge tour. So this was our first huge tour. And this is the show we brought around to so many places in the US, in Canada, in Europe. We really, really hit the ground running on this one.
And this was actually my first time spending the whole time with you guys. Before this, I would just pop in to just a few here and there, but I had just finished circus school and had all the free time in the world to sit in a Sprinter van and hide items underneath a seat.
And then I was there for part of the first week, and then I think I came back again at the end.
You did different legs of this tour with us.
Yeah, my general tour schedule is I try to, when there is a tour, if there's room for me, come and do a full week. I just take time off of work. But I also look for, Meg, you'll usually be like, here are all the dates, here's where there's room, and I'll try to come and do weekend loops where I can work on Friday, then fly in, then fly out after the Sunday show or on Monday morning.
Yep. And sometimes that works out great. And then sometimes you literally have to run on stage from the airport.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That was a rough one.
But you made it.
I felt so bad. You were so stressed. I was like, it's going to be okay, Hal. You're not on until 45 minutes into the show and you've done this part before. We can handle it.
Wasn't that Charleston?
It was Charleston, which was the same night that I got pulled over on the way to the theater for speeding.
Oh, right.
Wow. Ooh. See, now I'm looking to see when I traveled. I did Minnesota. I was there for Minnesota, and then I was there in Philly. I did a week starting in, I think, Philly to D.C. or something like that. I was there for 6 days. According to this, I probably got there early and then just did the two shows.
Yeah, you've done a bunch of different legs with us. You did Maine with us.
Twice.
Remember you were with us in Maine?
Yeah.
Because we got those potato donuts.
Yes, we did.
Yes, you did Maine with us twice. Yeah, because that you were with us, well, once on our first time in Maine and then once on our last time in Maine. And it was, you were there on the last day of tour, which is, as you know, the last day of tour, murder is legal.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we got stuck in traffic trying to get to, because we did Newark, then Maine, and then came back to Philly. And the Philly show, one thing to know about Meg is that she does a fantastic job of planning out the schedule. You know, like on HGTV, where they do, when they're renovating a house, there's always a contingency budget because things will come up that will cost extra money. So there's a contingency budget. If it's not used, it gets returned to the customers. But so there's a similar thing of time budget. Like, we're going to be there plenty of time. We can check in. And in this case, it was so bad that we got there, what, like an hour before showtime?
Yeah. It was because normally I have it so that we are in the city we're going to no later than 3:30 ever. Like, 3:30 is kind of like the latest we can get to a city. Mm-hmm. We did not get there until 6:30. So,
oh my goodness.
And the show, I think the show was at 8. So we were like, we didn't check into the hotel. We didn't shower. We didn't do any, like, I was, yeah.
That's just so rough on your body.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I think that we all cherish is taking that time, like, in between. We've been on the road for like 6 to 9 hours or whatever. And we'll be like, okay, we just need a second to not be looking directly at a road or be sitting in the same position or playing musical games in the van.
Mm-hmm.
And just like chill out for a second and take a shower or work out or eat or whatever. And when you have that time cut short, it really is challenging to like rev up for a show then after that. But Meg always does a great job. But sometimes things can't be helped, you know?
It was the last night of the tour, you know? Murder was legal. But yeah, I think the lesson of 2020 was and most people who work in live entertainment, most people who plan live entertainment, the worst thing that could happen is that you would have to cancel a show. It's the worst thing that could possibly ever happen in your mind is that you, for some reason, whatever it is, you have to cancel a show. And what 2020 taught us is that you're going to have to get real comfortable with doing that many hundreds of times over in the year 2020.
Yeah.
It was unthinkable to me that we would ever not play a show that we had sold tickets for. Yeah. The lesson is just like, well, there's some things that are more important.
Yeah. And it's out of your control. What is it? I mean,
exactly.
It's not your fault. But, you know, with 2020, we have persevered together, and we've all gotten through this together, much like in The Investigators. I always wonder this because Cecil made them choose people that they didn't come there with to be investigator like partners with. I wonder, some people I know did connect afterwards, and like I'd seen a bit of internet chatter about people becoming friends or like whatever. I wonder if you still keep in contact with your investigator partner. So if you were at one of the live shows and you made a connection or you have a hashtag misconnection with your investigator partner, please write to us on Twitter or on our Facebook. Hashtag
partnered up.
Partnered up. That's a good one.
Yeah. And then also, if you want to write into the fan zone to talk about it, feel free to do that.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Tell us your experiences at live shows, because there are other live shows to discuss. I remember the Steve script for this one had a reference to DashCon in it.
Oh yeah.
Because there's a death pit, like a death pit. Like, well, will we fill it with plastic balls? DashCon, for those who don't know, was a fan-funded convention for Tumblr fans. It's supposed to be a Tumblr con, and Night Vale was supposed to perform. Were you there for that, Meg?
I was not on the bill though. So I did not have to, we were on tour and it was like a stop on the tour, but I wasn't booked for that show. So
yeah,
Symphony and I just got to hang out in Chicago while the boys would go every day.
Yeah.
And it wound up being a disaster, and it was poorly run, and the Night Vale performance never happened for that reason. And I remember coming to Denver right after that had happened and seeing everybody. And it was just like, it had become, at this point, Night Vale is one of, if not the biggest podcast in the world. And so it was a big deal when Dash caught it. That was like a trending topic that got covered and talked about all over the place. And so I showed up and I was like, what happened? And I think Joseph didn't want to talk about it. And Jeffrey was telling me, like, sort of relaying the story. And I remember Cecil walking into the dressing room. I'd be like, are you talking about DashCon? And then and say yes. And he turned around and immediately walked out. Like it was that difficult. But they turned it in. Famously, one of the things that DashCon tried to do to make things up to be able to say, we have a ball pit. And it was a kiddie pool in the middle of a conference room or ballroom filled with plastic balls that like just a few people could sit in, like a sad, sad ball pit. So that got referenced here. And it was a fun, like, if you know, you know, kind of joke to slip in there. Which is what you get with live shows.
My favorite part about the Steve Carlsberg part was the clowns bit.
Oh, yeah. This is the clowns that are at your window and creating the creepiest thing of clown. Every Steve bit there is a definite arc to it.
Yeah.
Where it starts out, Steve is Steve, and then he goes into either a really dark existential monologue or a really dark, horrific description of something happening. So then the challenge for me is, I don't remember exactly how it went in the first one. This is not the first time we did one of these. That would have been before. If I just made the choice in rehearsal and it kind of stuck and it became like a thing that this feels like a Joseph thing that he would have noticed that like, oh, he does that well. I'm going to keep making him do that and challenge him with different versions of that. That's the challenge to me is like, how can I make it a little different and play? What is the exact opposite of what I do every other moment? And then try and bring it back in because it always gets cut with like the two of us laughing together. And it feels very David Lynch to perform.
Yeah, it is an interesting dynamic because there is the goofiness to Steve that is always coupled with something dark. That Steve does not necessarily know how dark it is or is not necessarily capable of expressing how uncomfortable he is with that darkness.
Yeah.
But I like that. But I like that they giggle about like they've like what's all this dark stuff that people would normally find like spooky and scary. And then they end up cracking up about it. They're like, oh, I love it. Seeing people crying.
Like what? And their faces fall. The first time we ever did one of those, like the laughter was like maniacal. That was really like, to me, I'm like, oh, he's become possessed.
Yeah.
That's the thing that makes sense to me is he's gone to a place, he's gone to this deep, dark place that it's taken him over. But then it's really easy to snap out of for whatever reason. So even then the laughter is like, ah, ha, 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 well, see you later. And then take off. But now it becomes like that. That's the pin that bursts the bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
And the way he forgets that you're there, it's just like, oh.
That's fun.
One of my favorite things about going over, because we were lucky enough to be able to perform the investigators in a virtual show during the Pendulch and the Pentacotta.
Mm-hmm.
The Pandemi Lovato.
Yes. I love the Pandemi Lovato. And, but it was nice to be able to go and read the script again and get that feeling and remember the bits that you did with everything. Because, you know, the difference between hearing it and seeing the actors perform it, and I'm sure we've said this before, but it's a definite different energy. It's a different feeling because, you know, you're getting to see how we're making the sounds and, like, the little inside jokes where there's like silence, but you also hear like laughter from the audience. You're like, what are they doing? That's so funny. And let me tell you, it's something funny.
And it's a completely different challenge to do it over Zoom.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you're acting for camera. Like the last one we did, I remember for me, I was like, okay, I have to do something. I'm not talking into a microphone that's going through these stacks out into the audience. I have to play completely different. I have to like get close to the camera and let me try underplaying it, underplaying the creepiness and like finding a different energy level. And it's weird because the thing about those live shows is the energy is so much different. Like when you come out, Meg, and infer that you're poisoning the water, there's like a lot of – you come in and bring – a lot of energy, and Cecil's energy changes every time someone is out there. There's a like a physical two people in a physical space is way different than doing it over Zoom.
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of what Cecil does is like kind of directing traffic, especially in these live shows where there's a ton of guests that are coming through. Mm-hmm. Like if you listen to the live album on Bandcamp, I think there's like 15 guest parts, and we never did the show where all 15 guests were in one place together, but we. You know, we definitely have had full bills, especially when we would do shows in Los Angeles. And so he would be sort of directing traffic all night. So he has the energy of people coming on stage with him and then driving back into the story, which is different in Zoom because you don't have the physical cues or the physical energy. So it's Cecil is still trying to direct traffic, but we're like little tiny boxes and there's no audience. It's hard to like kind of ride the wave and the energy of the audience. It's definitely a different skill that didn't exist to be honed until last year. So,
yeah.
Well, and I'm super excited to get back to it.
Back to the real life on stage with an audience.
IRL.
Yeah, me too. I've fantasized multiple times about what it would be like to do specifically a Night Vale show again. And that's not just getting to go to different theaters and try and maybe go to cities I haven't been to before, but seeing everybody, just the energy of being backstage and that feeling of doing, like if you've ever done a show before, if you're out there and the last show you did was in middle school or in high school doing a musical or a play, that energy you have from being backstage and hanging out with everybody, that doesn't go away. It changes over time. You know, we're not all like, we're going to do a show. We're doing it.
Right.
Oh my God. Do I look okay? But there's still an excitement to, hey, we're all here together to perform for an audience that wants to see us. We're in a different city. Like that has never grown old for me. Even if the driving is tough or just like the time that we're out on stage is always to me worth it. It feels like the first time I ever did it.
It's like the first time.
It's a precious, sacred thing for sure. Even again, when we're tired, when it's our seventh show in a row and we don't want to put our makeup on and tease out our hair and put on our two pairs of Spanx and, you know, walk out on stage. But yeah, it is. It's a sacred thing that it also never gets old for me. Even when it is old and I'm tired, it still feels like the place I want to be, which is great.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we get to do it with our friends, and we've become better friends over the time that we've gotten to travel and do this show. And honestly, one of the things that I love about our energy, especially, is that like, even when we've had a tough day or whatever, we can all agree to have a silly curtain call.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Is this the tour where we started that?
The themed curtain calls? No, I think that wasn't until like 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, until we did Ghost Stories that we started doing the themed bows.
I love those. They're so much fun.
Which was very fun.
And if you've ever been to a live show and seen our bows and you were like, what are they doing? It was a thing that we thought was funny at the time. And we were hoping you would guess. Sometimes it's like, show your favorite sport or go out and bust a dance move. You know, things like that.
Sometimes they were abstract, sometimes they were direct.
Yes.
And the best part about it is that we would come up with it during the show. And so Cecil wouldn't know what it was until he walked off stage.
Yeah.
And the like kind of changing of the guard where Cecil walks off and I walk on. And so either I would tell Cecil or someone the backstage would tell Cecil what the theme was. And so Cecil would have like, you know, 11 seconds to figure out how he was going to interpret the themed bow. whereas the rest of us had kind of been stewing over it for the, you know, the last half hour backstage.
And he's so exhausted because he's on, like, literally his only break is the intermission.
The weather.
The weather, rather, not intermission. Yeah. But the weather is his only break. Once he's out on stage, he's out there the whole time. So his version would always be like a muted energy. Like, he would do the best that he could do. But those were always fun.
Yes, because our first time in Philadelphia, we did TLA.
Wasn't it?
So yeah, this was our first time at the Keswick.
Philadelphia?
Yes.
That is a very special, that was very exciting to get to play that theater because it was one I went to as a kid. And one I went to as when I was in college too, to see comedians perform there. So to get to be on the same stage as George Carlin had been, that I'd seen him on.
That's cool.
Was a huge deal. Plus, one of my best friends, Jesse, his mom volunteers there as an usher. So,
oh, she brought us cookies.
She always worked. She always brought us cookies. She's a fantastic, she is a wonderful Italian woman. So she knows how to cook and she's real good at it, which she passed on to her son. He also is a fantastic cook. She would always bake and bring something. And then that was when I started throwing soft pretzels into the crowd.
And sometimes a tasty cake.
Oh, yeah. She is, as most of you know, I know we've mentioned this before, but we do not generally accept loose food.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
We appreciate that you thought of us to give us home-baked or prepared item. However, generally, unless you're a family member, this woman
she's family.
Is, we would not accept food just because, you know, dietary restrictions that you might be unaware of.
Cat allergies.
Exactly. So we have to think about that for our staff and crew. So generally, we don't accept anything outside of a package, but we do appreciate any and all of your talents and gifts.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, if she wasn't somebody I've known since I was 12, then probably not be the same. I also like the spread. I feel like they always have an interesting spread at the Keswick in that kitchen.
They always do catering.
Yes.
They never let us do a dinner bite. They always do catering there. So there's always like a chicken parm and a salad and some baked goods. It's always really nice. It's nice that good Italian, like Italian-American catering spread where there's like baked ziti. It's a good time. And then they always like pack up food for us at the end. It's very, very nice. There's a lot of hospitality at the Keswick. It's one of the places that I've always really enjoyed playing because it's
absolutely
does have that hospitality. And yeah, and it's also again with like your friend's mom bringing us cookies. It is what's one of the nice things about being on the road is that you kind of sometimes do get to see a family member or a friend, and it's like this little piece of a world that. Because they come when you're on tour, you're not in Philadelphia. You're on tour,
right?
So,
yep.
But when you get to see someone or like get a little piece of home cooking or a little piece of something from one of your families or friends, or it is this sort of like little jewel of the tour, and it's always weird when there's someone from your life who's not on tour that like comes into the world for the 15 minutes after the show.
Yep,
and you're like. I'm in such a weird place and you're it's just that nothing really kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird to see like when people come out to the show in Philly or wherever we are, whenever our family is there or friends, like you get to see them for a little bit. Maybe you go eat with them afterwards, but it is like this brief, like, oh, my worlds are colliding and now the ships have passed each other in the night.
Yeah.
And there they go. But the other great thing about being on the road is eating the local foods.
Absolutely.
No, I hate it. I won't. No, just kidding. It's the best.
When I kind of remember, like I've started marking every city we go to by the meals I have when I'm there. So I could tell you, if you named a city, I could tell you the meal that I had. Well, some of them. The last one we went on, the last time I was there when we went into Canada, it was at Chicago, Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah.
Toronto, Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Newark, Maine, Philly. That was that leg. But I remember the meals I had in each place because there was a an iconic restaurant to visit.
We got ice cream in Ann Arbor, the three of us.
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
Oh, it was so good.
That was so good.
Oh.
I think it was actually suggested by a fan.
Oh.
That Ann Arbor show is when we realized that Obama's name sounded Irish. We were just for like a half hour.
Shillelagh Obama.
Barack Obama. We just
I'm Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. We just thought it was the funniest thing.
Shamrock Obama.
Barack Shamrock Shake Obama.
I forgot that. Oh, Lord.
Oh, I love it.
It's it really is funny that when you spend all day together in a van and all night together, either backstage or on stage,
yeah,
the stupidest stuff becomes funny.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But that's a genius joke, though. It's not, I'm not saying that. The Obama thing is a joke.
Disparition was way into that. Disparition was really like always thinking of like if you started it near him, he would be like, all right, let's go.
Like, Lucky Charms Obama.
Lucky Charms Obama. Obama.
Lucky Charms Obama. Blarney Stone Obama.
Cable knit sweater Obama.
Up next, we have a conversation with the voice of John Peters, you know, the farmer, Mark Gagliardi. But first, a conversation about this episode's weather. This episode's weather was Maker of My Sorrow by Eliza Rickman. As always, Eliza Rickman is a babe and a beaut and a dear friend of the pod and of Night Vale. And I love this song as well. She's just so, her voice just like rings so clear and it stirs something within my body and my soul. So just, it's hard to explain it in words. It's just imagine me, dear listener. In a kimono, hand on my heart, rocking side to side and feeling the music swell in my heart. That is how I feel about this song.
I feel similarly. I feel this similarly about Eliza and her music in general. Her lyrics and her voice and her musicality is so haunting and so beautiful and yeah, just so clear. And the tone of her voice is, it's so unique. That it, and she really can fill a space. I think we were talking a couple episodes back about Carrie Elkin's voice.
Yes.
About how she can just like fill a room. And Eliza can too, but in a completely different way.
Definitely.
And it, like so much like such a reverberant way. Yeah, this song, especially, like I can hear, like she, this is one that she does a cappella and stomps. And I can hear it through the stage. Like, because if I'm like sitting under the stage where that's where the dressing rooms are a lot of times and we like hear it through the floorboards. So yeah, I when someone just says Maker of My Sorrow, I can hear the like stomps like through a theater from the backstage. Just like, it's like a sense memory. It's like smelling fried chicken or something. But
like in addition to her being like a wood nymph come to life who can play a million different like interesting instruments and
absolutely
word I would like haunting. And then also the other word I would use is in, like there's something interesting about how she makes music and how you're watching her perform it on stage. And like there are risks that she take that I saw her take or that she's willing to take as an artist out there with different instruments and stuff that just blows me away. Like it's innovative.
Mm-hmm. She can make music out of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen her make music out of dog toys and music boxes and toy pianos and the floor and a pair of shoes. And she just has such a great understanding of orchestration and musicality and tone that, yeah, there's nothing she can't make music out of. It's really cool. She plays I've seen her play the harpsichord and the ukulele and the regular piano. And like,
I actually think her degree is in composition.
Yeah.
Mm. Makes sense.
So she just like her ear is immaculate. And if you don't know Eliza's music or haven't really delved in, this is your opportunity, my babes. It's out there for you. Go get it. And she's currently working on some new music. So get it while it's hot.
Love Eliza. Love touring with her. Have toured lots of different places with her. And yeah, just really always have a really nice time with her. She's just a good person, great musician, all around good time gal.
Good time gal.
She's a good time gal. Yeah,
she's a good time gal.
That's right.
But I also think she fits really nice for our audience. I feel like when we bring weathers to the show, we want to, especially with live weathers, we want to make sure that our audience will connect with them. And it's like, it felt like an instant kind of puzzle piece as soon as we found Eliza. was just like, so she fits so well into the show. I know that the audience is going to be very entertained and happy with her for 25 minutes at the start of the show.
So. Absolutely.
Stay right there. Good Morning Night Vale will return after a brief break.
Welcome, the voice of John Peters, you know the farmer, Mark Gagliardi. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Woo.
Y'all together again. This is exciting.
It really is. We've been hoping to have you on the show for literally years, and so it feels like a momentous day to finally have you here.
Hal keeps trying to keep me away.
I want you all to myself.
Yes.
He keeps coming up with excuses for why I can't be on the show.
One of us is enough.
Yeah. I shoved my way through today. No, this is delightful, and I'm very excited.
We did have you on once on the phone.
Yeah.
We called you and had you on speakerphone, but that was, even then we were like, we're going to have you on, and now look.
Yeah, I remember.
All those years later.
We're keeping our promises.
I know.
Promises kept.
Thanks, y'all.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is our investigators episode, which is, this was this massive tour that we did in 2015, and you were on the first leg of it with us.
I was, and it was a blast. It's the only time I've ever toured before, and this is the perfect group of people to tour with because everyone is kind. No one gets on anyone's nerves. There are, I mean, at least I didn't think so. I may have gotten on everyone's nerves. I may have been.
It was you.
There's like,
it was you.
Yeah, they say there's always one, and I'm like, there wasn't one on this tour. Like, oh, I guess I was the one.
No.
But it was delightful. And being on the road with Dessa was great because she was the one that would be like, she and Abby would be like, okay, now we have to do, we've been driving all day, calisthenics. And we would get on the side of the road and try to get some exercise in. It was just every detail was delightful.
Yeah, we did squats.
Squats for day of the month.
We for every day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If it was towards the end of the month, whoo boy, was that a bun burner.
Every time you stop.
The first of the month is great. A squat.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you would do like a big one, like a squat jump. But towards the end of the month, you're getting up into the 30s. Boy, you got to, you know, crank them out, you know, get your glutes on fire.
I'm glad I was only there for 3 days at the beginning.
At the first 3 days of the month.
That's it. That's all I needed.
Yeah, I'm good.
This tour is actually special. This is my first tour that I ever tour managed. You were there for my first week ever.
You were amazing at it.
I was fine at it. I'm so much better now, Mark. You have to come back on the road with us.
I would love to come back on the road.
I have an app. We use an app.
What?
Oh yeah.
We have. That's how we get all of our information about what time we have to be in the lobby, what time we have to be at the show, all of the like Wi-Fi information, who you're rooming with, all of that. It's in the app, babe.
This sounds delightful.
It's great.
Not that it wasn't delightful before, the folders and binders and colored pencils version and stickers. That version of it is amazing and wonderful. And that's what, I mean, isn't touring supposed to be kind of messy? Like, doesn't an app make it, like, there's not enough just random office stuff everywhere and frazzledness backstage at a show?
Less of that.
No, the messiness happens outside of our van.
Oh.
Which is good. I mean, that's where we want to keep it. We want the mess on the outside of the van. And the cool, fun stuff, it just leaves more room for cool, fun stuff.
Right.
And cool, fun hangs. Like, for example, when we were on this tour and we were in Florida, I believe, you, Cecil, and I were pushing each other in that cart.
Yeah.
In the parking lot.
Just at 1 in the morning in the parking lot of a Home Depot, we found a shopping cart. We had been driving all day and then did a show, and we were just like when a toddler has too much energy and they need to run it out before they go to bed.
Absolutely.
It was just, let's put Symphony or Cecil into a shopping cart and run them as fast as we can across a parking lot at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And look, no one died.
Nobody died.
So
it was amazing.
We didn't have to explain anything to Meg.
No, you were really living.
Right.
That's, you did the opposite of dying. It was living.
Yeah, that's right.
Alive!
Thank God we were at the end of that. And we got the challenge coins.
Oh, that was really fun.
Oh, right. In D.C., right?
That was very fun.
I forgot about that, yes.
We got them in D.C. I grabbed mine. Where is it? It's in the other room.
Mine too.
Yeah, I have mine. It's right over there.
Yeah, it's we got Secret Service challenge coins.
From a fan, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from a fan. It was amazing.
And the game was if somebody pulled out their challenge coin and one person didn't have theirs, they were the one that had to buy a round of drinks. And I remember we were like, well, let's go get a case of beer because we were going to watch a movie or do something.
Yeah.
And we went down to the gas station and we had this giant, you know, 24-pack of beer. And everybody kind of hesitantly went, are we going to do this thing now? And everybody pulled them out and Dylan did not have his on him. So he had to buy the case of beer for the whole night, which was hilarious.
Well, and in fact, that night, Mark, was when the reason we got the beer was so that we could all crowd into one hotel room to watch the documentary Going Clear about Scientology.
Oh, no.
Because that had just come out at that time.
That's right. We were, on a laptop.
Yes.
Yes. We were on like a, it was like,
yeah,
all of our mental energy at that point was focused on Scientology and Going Clear for like 3 days.
It was crazy, but it was so fun. It's those moments like that that are the magic. And that tour also introduced me to... Y'all have probably been back, and I don't know the name of it, but the vegan wrap place in Savannah, Georgia. Because we had to always stop at vegan places because we had vegans on the tour. And there was a wrap place that we stopped in Savannah, Georgia. And I still remember, I will never forget it. It was kale, sweet potato, and black bean wrap. And it is one of the best things I have ever eaten. And I'm not a vegan.
I think we have gone to that place again.
Man, that was just, I keep, there are certain foods from certain experiences in life that I just remember. That's one of them.
Well, this is the show to talk about it on.
Yeah.
Good.
This is the official food podcast of Night Vale. I remember you and I walking over from the hotel in D.C. and going to Ben's Chili because we were playing the American Theater, I think.
Yeah.
And it was right next door.
The Lincoln.
The Lincoln. Thank you.
The Lincoln.
We were at the Lincoln and we ate at Ben's Chili next door. And it wasn't the best chili. Sorry, people in D.C. But we did sit.
But it's an amazing experience.
We sat in a booth next to a picture of Adam Richman, the host of Man versus Food, which I contend he looks like a doppelganger of you.
I've heard that.
And so I took a picture of you next to Adam Richman, which I've been trying to figure out a way to do for a long time. And neither of us knows him in real life. So the chances of that happening with him in person are zero.
Maybe he's a Night Vale fan.
That's true.
There's a lot of them.
One time, can the weather just be him eating a sandwich?
Yeah, let's look into it. I'll see if I can get him on the show. I actually just listened to a podcast that he was on. So
was he good?
Yeah, he's talking about food.
Well, he knows food.
I mean, it's what the guy does.
It's the only type of podcast I listen to. So.
He's hosting that new show, or he's one of the people they interview on that new History Channel show about the food that made America. Have y'all seen this?
Oh, the fast food documentary?
It's all about like the characters in this, like the important Americans that they profile in this are Heinz and Kraft and Kellogg. And there's so many moments in this thing that are amazing that are like Kellogg walking past someone pouring milk on their flakes to soften them. And then him just sort of slowly nodding while the camera zooms in. Like, this is how cereal was born. It's amazing.
Yes, yes. It might be mad.
Yeah, there's so many of those.
But it just might work. Yeah,
there's so many. That's so crazy. It just might work moments on this show. Delightful.
You're like, what if we put the cheese with the macaroni?
Right. What?
Apparently, I just found this out. The reason why American diet is very centered around cheese is because the government has been kind of propping up the dairy industry for a long time and had $4 billion worth of cheese in storage. And that's why they started giving away cheese, like government cheese, and all these things, these ads and stuff. So it's wild. The government is not trying to track you, but they are trying to feed you cheese.
That is great.
What? The cheese?
If the big conspiracy about the government is they just want you to constantly be eating cheese,
yeah.
I'm fine with that. They don't have to trick me into it.
Apparently the cheese caves.
Cheese caves?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's miles and miles of caves. Each American could get 4 pounds of cheese. You are responsible personally for 4 pounds of cheese.
Done.
A day?
Yeah.
I think total.
Yeah, I've done that.
4 pounds.
Yes, 4 pounds a day.
They just want nobody to ever take a shit again. So they're like, everybody eat 4 pounds of cheese. Also, did you know that Campbell's soup is the reason why we eat green bean casserole at Thanksgiving? They were like, we need to figure out other uses for our soup so we can sell more soup. Here's something using our cream of mushroom that we're going to propagate everywhere.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Those mid-century cookbooks that came with products are some of the greatest bits of ridiculousness.
Oh, yeah.
Jell-O, salads.
Just suspend it. Anything in Jell-O.
Hot dogs.
Yeah, aspics.
Aspics.
If you go on Amazon Prime, Amazon Prime has purchased the license or outright purchased all this old industrial footage from like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And one of them is like the cooking for the modern woman.
Ugh.
And they show like this salad is perfect for when the ladies come over to talk about where their husbands are. And it's just a giant plate of lettuce with like Jell-O and olives on it.
Wretched.
It is the most 1950s. Like,
amazing.
And don't forget your cottage cheese.
Put that in the Jell-O too.
Yeah. Come on, eat it. Eat it. Stop crying.
To keep your ladylike figure and keep your man.
Oh my God. Those things make great backgrounds just to like throw on the TV when I'm like working and I just kind of want some motion in the room. I'll turn on those. Or I'll turn on, there's a great Georges Méliès, like YouTube collection that I just throw that up. I like having a screensaver going. Those make an excellent screensaver.
So you're saying you live in a modern bowling alley?
I do.
Where those screens are always showing?
Yeah. Like,
I was going to say.
Sometimes I get a turkey. Yeah.
Russ Meyer's films are on in the background while you're trying to record.
I was like, you may have sensory issues, Mark.
I need to have sensory load in at some point.
You're like, stimulus.
I can sit at a desk for like 15 minutes and then I have to get up and walk around. Unless I'm talking to you and I see your faces, then that is the perfect stimulus.
Just trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I'll take it. It's a good trap.
So what was it like actually before? I mean, you know, you and I came from Thrilling Adventure Hour and then we did Night Vale the first time in 2013, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Then by 2015, you're out on the road and Night Vale is like at its height. What was that like? What was your experience going on the road and actually doing the shows?
Wild. It felt like being a Beatle. It felt like being a Beatle by proxy. It felt like I was opening for the Beatles. Like I was touring with Beatles. You three are the Beatles that were there. I was witness and peripheral to collecting some of that energy. Like I was listening to the thing today, to this episode today, and these crowds for this tour, I'd never heard anything like this. Like the fandom of Welcome to Night Vale is so energetic and so fun that all they had to say was a middle schooler and a pocket of the crowd went crazy. And then who reads, another pocket of the crowd went crazy. And by the time they say Tamika, the crowd is going insane. Like, and Cecil does such a great job of just riding the waves of that. Like he's so good at conducting a crowd. That just blew my mind. I'd done a lot of shows. I've done a lot of theater where, you know, the lights go out, the audience is enjoying the show and they're polite, but I've never felt like a rock star before. And that's what this show felt like.
Do you feel like you could have stage dived?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Do you think they'd catch you?
I don't know. I know they would catch Cecil. I know that they would catch any of you. Maybe not Steve Carlsberg at
probably
that
not.
Point in the story because he was still getting booed a lot. They're like, we don't know you, John Peters. You haven't earned this stage dive. I'm keeping my hands firmly in my lap. Thank you.
That's not true, though.
No, they love you.
You're going to bounce off the armrest of the Lincoln Theater.
Because they knew you. Like, even when we did that initial, show in Brooklyn, we all got these crazy ovations coming out on stage, but it wasn't for, nobody knew who.
No, it was for a character that they had heard about.
Exactly. The character, like,
yeah.
So there's always, like, that's the excitement is they get to see the character. Then over time, they know, you've been on a couple podcast episodes. I've been on a couple podcast episodes. So they know the person as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you become tied to it. But, like, you always got an ovation
It's fun. And that's the thing. Yeah, it's a character that, like, it feels like being a steward of something, being on the road with this. And also the after the shows, it was amazing to meet everybody and see how intensely everyone loves this show. And also just, you know, it's one of those stand in the wings and listen to it, and you hear something new every time. Like, I wrote down all my favorite things when I was re-listening today.
Oh, yes, your list, your golden list.
Yeah. I made a golden list of things that I loved. And the line, where did it go? This can't be happening. Nothing ever can. That I had never heard before, but it is the most intensely weird Welcome to Night Vale turn of phrase, but I love it so much. Yeah, just little moments.
Can you reveal some of your other golden moments?
Oh, sure.
First of all, how many things are on this list?
I don't know, 5 or 6. There were just.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be like 75.
Little moments like that. No, the number 421.
Oh. I was like, we're going to limit this.
I love going through the count, listening to the calendar, and on Monday this happens. Tuesday is a lie. Calendars are, what was it? Propaganda. That made me laugh. Read a little every day. That's how you build up immunity.
Yes.
Is another great moment. Cecil arcing that story was just in general to me, like the buddy cop story. And by the way, where was the version that was recorded? What version was that? Because that was not an American accent when everybody was speaking in unison.
Well, due to the nature of sometimes the fees associated with recording something for commercial release in a venue. I have no idea where any of these were recorded.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Neither do I.
Wasn't it outer space?
It was outer space.
It was in a recording studio, and we hired a local choir to come up. Yeah. Plot.
We were in Schwitz.
They were great.
Schwitz.
Yeah. Yes. We were in Schwitz.
We were in Francia.
And then the last line of the last one that I had was the last line of the episode that just, like, it warms my heart. And to listen to it at the tail end, I hope, of what we've been going through globally and nationally and personally, all of us, for the last little over a year, the line, "Stay tuned for tomorrow by any means necessary," is such a great, like, that's such a great thing to take home right now, I think. So yeah, it was delightful to go back and listen to it again.
Thanks for sharing your golden list of favies.
Oh, my pleasure.
I wanted to take a step back because you mentioned how masterfully Cecil conducts the crowd and, you know, plays with the energy and things like that. You, and I don't know if any of our listeners know this, have known Cecil for longer actually than I have.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Is surprising.
Cecil and I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee together. We were in show choirs at the same time we weren't in the same show choir, but we were in the part of the same East Tennessee show choir universe, the same ETSU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan.
Wait till we get to phase three.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. It's going to be amazing. And so we knew each other from performing together as kids. And then we shared a very close friend as well in high school, Lee. And Lee and I would go and see Cecil when he was working at the Cinnabon.
Yes.
In the mall. And he would take breaks and we would hang out with Cecil while he was working there. But I remember an amazing story of Cecil. We all did a cruise. It was I think it was the cruise where he did this. But he got up and he sang On My Own from Les Mis. And it was fantastic. Yeah. It was like half performance, half karaoke. It must have been like a karaoke situation, but it was all show folk doing, like, giving it their all on these. And here's like ninth grade Cecil doing On My Own from Les Mis. And it was an absolute treat.
With a bold baritone.
Yeah.
On my own, pretending he's beside me.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Okay, that headcanon is going to live forever.
Just so I can really picture it. This was like ninth grade Cecil. This isn't like a recent on a boat.
No, no, no. This is like we were all maybe like 13.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to fall asleep to that in my mind tonight.
Yeah, isn't it the sweetest?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm
Love that. Funny enough, Cecil just moved and he found he still had his Cinnabon name tag.
Yeah. I saw that. Oh my God.
I love Cinnabon.
Yeah. I love that he kept it. Cinnabon's amazing. Do you say Cinnabon or Cinnabon?
Oh, it's Bon.
I say bun because Cinnabon. It's spelled right. B-O-N, but I know a lot of people call them
Cinnabon
because they are cinnamon buns.
Right.
From Cinnabon, they call them Cinnabons.
Yeah, but I call it Cinnabon.
Yeah.
Because it's B-O-N.
Yeah.
I think I say Cinnabon, but I know I'm wrong.
And with how?
Now listening to it, I should be saying Cinnabon. Now I'm going to.
Look, man, I say my own last name wrong.
How do you say the ice cream treat that is like fruity? S-H-E-R-B-E-T. How do you say it?
Sherbet. Sherbet.
How?
I know it's sherbet. I probably said sherbet when I was a kid.
Okay.
I always said sherbet as a kid, yeah.
I definitely say sherbet.
Like it's a name.
I say sherbet as an adult.
You do?
Yeah.
Live. You know what? Why not? The R is silent.
I'm going to say sorbet.
Yeah.
It's sorbet.
Living on the edge.
The R is invisible. Sorry. Sometimes they're silent letters. Sometimes they're invisible.
Sherbet. God. Sherbet's a great name for like a sidekick.
Yeah.
Animal.
Right? Come on, sherbet.
All right. Here we go.
Yeah.
Look at him scurry. Look at him scurry into his hamster wheel.
I eat garbage.
You go, sherbet. Oh, my gosh.
Well, and you guys also have a podcast that most people who listen to this podcast probably know about, but since you've been on, like, since this show aired, what have you been up to?
You mean for the last 5 years?
Absolutely, babes.
Yeah. I've, you know what? I've had kind of an eventful 5 years.
Day by day. Tell us about it.
I moved to New York for 3 of them, and then as soon as I moved back to L.A., I booked a job on a television show that took me around the world for a couple of years. And then the world shut down for a little while and we're opening back up now. So, you know, and that show, season 2 of that show is coming out hopefully very soon.
I just realized that this tour is what, fall of 2015?
Mm-hmm.
Spring
of 2015. So this is as
spring of 2015.
March, April, yeah.
As this was happening, as this tour was happening, the Thrilling Adventure Hour was coming to an end.
Yeah.
So it was March, April, and then May was our last show at Largo, and then we went to Australia and New Zealand right after. It just occurred to me like
It was sort of it's like one chapter ended and a new chapter started.
And we just started the podcast.
And we just started, we got this. And also that was when we did
I was going to say, what podcast?
Hal, remind me.
We got this with Mark and Hal.
Right. We got this with Mark and Hal.
Your name is first. I did that so you would remember
Oh, no. we're at like, how many episodes are we at? Like 310, something like that?
I think we're in the 330s now.
Are we up to 330s? Somewhere. Yeah, it's just an excuse to talk to Hal once a week for an hour.
Yeah. Make sure we stay in touch.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really good way.
The podcast is just me asking Mark if he's eating enough.
Right. Are you sleeping? How's your love life? Are you good? What's going on?
Are you getting new underwear?
Did you see did you call your family back?
I called them back, yes. I called them back, Mark.
Your color looks good. You look like
It's good, right? It's good. You look good, Hal.
You look good. Yeah.
I don't know if you've mentioned it on this show before, but we settle pointless arguments. We are the Supreme Court of Dumb. So come to us with your hot takes and contrasting hot takes, and we will sort them out.
That's right.
That's the whole pitch.
That's a good pitch. It is a fun time. You gentlemen are funny together, and you have a chemistry. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh,
we have 20 years into your friendship. I don't know if you knew that.
That's pretty fun.
We are 20 years. Oh, that's a good, that's a good memory that we've known each other that long.
Oh my gosh!
Because I was trying to do the math.
I just guessed.
No, it's like 20 years, 2000, maybe
and
two.
And getting handsomer every day.
Ding!
So handsome.
I was talking about Hal.
Oh yeah, me too. I was talking about you, Symphony.
Oh. Handsome.
Sexier.
I was talking about Meg.
Oh my God.
We're all beautiful.
You guys, Love Fest. Oh, I want to give you guys a great big hug. I want to give you guys a great big hug right now.
Yeah.
We need to take a screen grab of this Zoom because we're all just like looking at each other.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
We'll share that on the internet with all of the people who are on the internet.
Yeah.
I also need to send you some of the photos from that tour to put on the Patreon so they can see Mark then. In the Sprinter.
Oh, I loved the Sprinter. I love me a Sprinter, and I love me a. I don't know if they're a sponsor of this. I love me a Hampton Inn because I can fill my pockets with hard-boiled eggs and bagels and little boxes of cereal, and those last me until we get to whatever town we're headed toward.
Put your pockets full of eggs.
Oh, he'll load up.
Heck yeah, they had hard-boiled eggs. Bagels and hard-boiled eggs. I would just fill up my pockets and walk out the front door of the hotel like, thank you. I hope you don't realize I look like I'm wearing jodhpurs.
You were like,
you don't have to steal them.
They want you to take it.
You're like Perry Farrell and been caught stealing. You just had a big pregnant belly that you were putting all the food in. Like, no, I'm so close to having this baby that's real.
How did all that bacon get in there? Still in the tray and still with the Sterno can lit underneath.
First rule of the road, whatever's not nailed down.
Take it. Mm-hmm. Televisions.
Whatever you want.
Right?
Just take it.
There was that big bin of hotel remote controls in the back of the Sprinter van.
Yeah. We couldn't help ourselves.
Just for that art project.
It was the only way to feel alive was to take them.
Sure.
And out of spite, you know? Yeah.
Just spite stealing from a hotel.
These curtains are mine.
What am I going to do with all these Gideon Bibles?
We did get charged once because someone took a hairdryer.
No, really?
And I'm like, you're the reason they're stapled to the wall. You're the reason.
Those are the worst hairdryers. I don't think I've ever used a hairdryer at a hotel that did. Like,
I know.
It's the equivalent of.
Yeah,
someone just blowing in your face.
Someone with asthma taking a test. That's what it is.
Yeah, but that's a quality embroidered velvet bag that says hairdryer on it, though, that is going to wind up holding my toiletries.
You would do a better job blowing into that bag and then pushing it out under your hair than you would using that plugged-in hairdryer.
Like a head bellows?
Yes, make a head bellows out of it.
Exactly.
Head bellows.
My head bellows is full now after this time together.
Oh, what a treat.
Mark, thank you for finally joining us on this show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And thank you for all of your contributions to the world of Night Vale. We always really enjoy when John Peters enters an episode. He's been in a lot of them recently, actually. Yeah. We are in the storyline. We hear from John a lot.
A lot.
It was a good run. John Peters had a good run. And this, thanks for having me in the, just to bask in the glow of Welcome to Night Vale. It's a hell of a smart show and a hell of a good time. And I couldn't ask for a better group of people to break me into the world of touring.
You're broken.
Now I'm broken. They broke me in and ruptured me. I was ruptured into this world. And I thank you.
Rode hard, put away wet.
That's right.
Thanks everyone for listening to our discussion of the Investigators. An extra special thank you to our guest, Mark Gagliardi. We really appreciated having him here. Our next episode we're going to discuss is The 1237. Until then, feel free to follow us on Patreon at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. Until then, good morning, Night Vale. Good morning.
Good Morning Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Loveland, and Meg Bashwinner. It is edited and mixed by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwinner and Symphony Sanders. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our guest this week, Mark Gagliardi. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com to share your theories and ask questions, or to remember 2015 with fondness. This show is powered by our patrons like Colibri, Kathleen Sweet, Patrick Lusk, Ginny, and Michael. If you are interested in supporting this show in exchange for lots of fun, exclusive, insider, hyper cool kid content, check us out at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. For more info on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Night Vale Chat. Special thanks to Joella Knapp, Jeffrey Craner, and Joseph Fink. The Calzone ingredient of the week is cooling thunderstorms that disappear as quickly as they arrive.
From the creators of Welcome to Night Vale, Alice Isn't Dead, and Within the Wires comes a new Audible original. Unlicensed. In the outskirts of Los Angeles, where the cul-de-sacs and strip malls sprawl into the desert, two unlicensed private investigators scrape by on whatever small cases come their way. But when a teenage girl pleads for them to take the strangest case of their career, this unlikely pair, with no resources and no backup, will follow a trail of seemingly unconnected cases, which will lead them to a ransom, a murder, a mysterious wellness center, and a conspiracy that might go all the way to the governor.
It's important to catch small fires early. They don't stay small for long.
Unlicensed. Available now at audible.com/unlicensed.
From PRX.